Connor Contemporary Art is very pleased to be talking today with some of the artists that are in this year's Academy 2006 exhibition. Academy 2006 is the sixth year of our annual invitational survey dedicated to outstanding work by recent fine art graduates in Washington-Baltimore area college art programs. With us we have Ben Duke from the Maryland Institute College of Art, Andy Eklund, also from the Maryland Institute College of Art, Nick Korn from Georgetown University, and Corey Wagner from the Maryland Institute College of Art.
All right. Why don't we just start with you, Nick. Say your name and where you're from.
I'm Nick Korn. I'm from Boston, Mass. And I went to Georgetown.
I'm Andy Eklund. I'm from the Midwest, and I went to MICA.
My name is Benjamin Duke, and I'm from Utah, and I also went to MICA.
I'm Corey Wagner. I went to the Maryland Institute, and I am from Wyoming.
Okay, terrific. So one of the reasons we wanted to have you here this afternoon is just to talk a little bit about, as young artists coming directly from MFA, your MFA as well, right, and BFA programs, say a little bit about your work, and then name one of your biggest influences. Somebody that you looked at in school, maybe went and saw in the museums, or even talked to. Corey, let's start with you.
One of my biggest influences, I suppose, as I was going through school was Tom Friedman. And I have to say that his work influences me, not in a necessarily a positive way. I would have to say that I do what I do, and then I have to look at his work to make sure that, you know, I'm not competing with a theme that he's really covered. And I've also had a lot of influences just from the people around me in my graduate program. I felt like my program was fairly small. It was only 10 people. And we had a lot of intermingling of ideas, and we really, say, affected each other in the way that we kind of grew greatly. And I would say that another one of my larger influences conceptually would be my dear friend Arlene Raven, who recently passed away, and the way that she was able to pluck out the ideas that I was working with that maybe I couldn't even see, and to bring them to my attention. And she could always do that, and she always had a way of seeing what it was that I was really getting at that I couldn't see. And I really am fortunate to have had as much time with her as I did, and I could never ever think of a better way to have matured as an artist than to be in the Reinhardt School of Sculpture.
So this work that we are showing this evening and this afternoon actually is called Tax. But tell us a little bit about what is the piece. What are we looking at?
It's three systems put together into one piece, and it's basically just thumbtacks in a wall, but it's been gridded out into a dispersal pattern that's associated with magnetic waves, and it's also a spiral of this Fibonacci sequence, and it's also another dispersal even pattern that I came up with just myself. So it's like kind of getting this natural pattern with a technological pattern, and then a pattern that I pulled out of my own brain. And I guess it was more about mapping than anything at the time, and kind of just dealing with kind of simple optics. But I think what it really came down to was that I kind of enjoy punishing myself. My thumb. The first time I did it, I seriously could not feel my thumb for a good week after I made it, and it just, the first day afterwards, it just wouldn't bend.
And how many tacks do we have in the wall? Pushpins, I think.
Clear
pushpins.
Yes, the clear plastic pushpins of a certain size, type, and product. And I think I have a little over 6,000.
Oh, on this one. Certainly is beautiful. Thank you. Andy, you also use sort of everyday objects in your work.
Yeah.
Tell us a little bit about the piece that you're showing here. Also a sculpture.
Yes, it's a model of a Imperial class Star Destroyer, as you may remember from the opening scene of the original Star Wars film. And so, yeah, as far as our material is concerned, for me it always comes to what is the most appropriate material for what it is that I'm building. And I wanted to build this model as to be a part of a larger installation for my thesis show, which was all loosely based on an escapist reaction to the global political climate. And the title of the piece is, "As a Nation, We Have No Ambitions of Empire." So, and which is a quote from George W. Bush, one of his State of the Union addresses. And I've been reading about this idea of new empires in a book written by David Harvey called The New Imperialism, and in which he outlines empire as a way of controlling capital assets, which would be an example would be like an oil well or a port city, and that we're getting really in depth here. However,
you can go with that. But
so it was. I was reading about this sort of conglomeration of this enormous power that our nation, particularly our executive branch, had built, and disliking it and sort of seeing this discontent towards it, but feeling that because this executive branch had built so much power and had gone to, like, controlling so much power, that we couldn't, like, bring them down in traditional means. And I wouldn't even know what non-traditional means we would use.
So basically this took the form in your head of a battleship made of how many tongue depressors?
Several thousand. Yeah. And I sort of, when you're working like that with, like, and Corey could probably attest to it as well, like, when you're there, like, just with the material and it's just you, like, gluing things together, pushing them in a wall, perhaps, so you sort of realize what it is that you're doing and what it's really about. And, yeah, those are, perhaps as an artist, like, those are the best tools.
It's a very obsessive quality for both of your work,
I guess.
Well, Nick, tell us a little bit about maybe some of the obsessive qualities in your work as a photographer and where you're coming from, what you're doing.
Yeah, I think I totally understand what you're saying. When you're totally in the middle of your work and surrounded by your pieces and kind of like doing repetitive actions, you kind of understand a bigger understanding. And it's certainly that way with my photographs, and especially recently, similar to the piece that's here, my photographs are the combination of many, many photographs. And so it's the same thing. I'm kind of surrounded by sometimes hundreds, if not a thousand images, and kind of it's like digging through them and kind of like they just totally kind of take over for like a little while before I can kind of sort through them and find a pattern. And then I just kind of spend, you know, hours at it. Like as soon as I find it, you just lose yourself, and then you turn it around and it's done. So, or at least on its way.
Well, who was your biggest influence?
That's a really hard question.
Or maybe there is one.
I kind of just try to see as much as I can, whether it's in books. I try to go to galleries as much as I can and see like my peers' works as well. I guess if I have to choose influences, I kind of spread across media. And I mean, there's photographers who do similar collages like Hockney or Jeff Wall. And then also like a lot of more graphic artists like maybe Baldessari. And so I guess, yeah.
Who's your biggest influence, Ben?
Ooh, my biggest influence. I think that there's like a conglomeration of influence that's really been strong for me. And I think that really it's been in my peer group. And back in Utah, coming out of undergrad, there was like a group of six of us who were really tight that was like really influenced each other, I think. But that would be Camilla Taylor, and you can see her work at horsefleshpress.com.
Ah, advertisements.
And you can see, and also Kian Watson, or the good friend of mine. And more recently in Baltimore, I think I've been influenced by the work of Michael Hindle and Shangram Mojumdar. And you can see his work at shangrammojumdar.com.
Excellent.
And I think that for me, I mean, my work really, well, one aspect of my work is this idea of spontaneous community. And I think that a lot of my work really springs out of those relationships that I have with my friends. And then the piece that's in the show is more about communities interacting, where one community will bump up against another. And I kind of end in that bumping up, your ideas about the world are changed through interaction. And so I was kind of talking about it as a encounter with the real, or, you know, just being forced to see someone else's reality.
So what I'm looking at is a painting, an oil painting of you,
mm-hmm.
being embraced by a giant octopus.
Right.
Explain yourself.
So kind of, I mean, the way that I'm thinking about it is that real that is formed by the other community that you might be interacting with is a subjective real that is unique and true to those individuals. And in that way, it's kind of an unreal real. So the octopus is like that unreal reality. So in the image itself, there's a framing device of the background image, which for me was saying that this framed image is unreal. So when something is framed, it's, you know, pictured.
Mm-hmm.
So then the things that break the frame would be this me, the self-portrait, and the octopus. So those things, but those are the things that are clearly unreal, where the background image is kind of a straightforward landscape.
Mm-hmm. Streetscape.
So, yeah.
Yes.
So trying to make the thing that is real unreal by framing it, and the things that are clearly unreal more real by having them break the frame. So that's kind of the way I was thinking about it.
So that's a lot of real.
Where does, yeah. Yeah. Where does
surreal
that put us?
Or post-surreal.
Yeah. Well, it would be like real trying surreal. To push that notion of what is real and questioning it, and hopefully it reinforces that sense of the subjective real, or this is real to me.
Definitely.
And then you come in, you know, have an encounter with someone else and their understanding.
Oh yeah.
And it really shifts, like, the way that I would see the world shifts when I, you know, interact with other people. Yeah,
because we see the world through a system of myths, really.
Right. Yeah.
You know,
for sure,
so.
Yeah.
I did a whole series of drawings and paintings with whiteout, because it was like correcting the way that you look at things.
Yeah.
And it was, I mean, everything I do has a little bit of a joke to it.
Yeah.
But that was just kind of like, that was the basic gist. So I understand, like, when, you know, maybe it's because we go through these kind of really intense times in our lives, like when we're in graduate school, that, you know, things get, there's a lot of upheaval, and so you kind of start really having to look at what is real in your life, or what is just a myth, or what are you going to make real for yourself?
Well, graduate school is just like surreal.
Yes, yeah, that's it.
You don't have to do anything except make work for like 40 hours a week.
How are you being in graduate school or undergraduate school? Are you influenced by? Is there something distinctive about the DC Baltimore area that you're engaging with, whether it be like the museum to the academic tradition, or are you just sort of creating works in this bubble? Are you influenced at all by being here?
I think a lot. I caught a lot of influence from a lot of the artwork that is happening in Baltimore currently, and it's pretty socially activated. I think the guys in Camp Baltimore, for one, and kind of getting to know those people as well. And I think there's starting to be a lot of more diverse work happening in Baltimore, and especially kind of near the MICA campus and the Copycat building. There's some great, I guess, performances or performance-based work, as well as musical events go on there as well.
So, and there's like Area 405 as far as sculptors go. Baltimore is a nonprofit space that they have studios and whatnot there, and so that was definitely
Well, that's right around the corner.
Yeah, it's right around the corner from the Copycat building. But it's nice being in Baltimore, where it was like you have the D.C. kind of scene going on, and you have the New York and Philly scene, and you're kind of right in the middle of it all, but it's kind of like you can go to your quiet place, which is Baltimore. I say it, and it's true. I mean, you go
except
there.
Except for the gunfire.
Well, there's a gunfire. You know, that's how your rhythm.
That keeps you stable.
How about for you, Nick? You were in D.C. at Georgetown.
Yeah, I guess I'm the only one from D.C. So, I mean, certainly the city was really important. I kind of always been a city person, and so a lot of my work, a lot of what I take pictures of has to do with the city and wouldn't exist without the city. In terms of
photographs of Union Station.
The photograph in the show is of Union Station. If I have an idea or if I have like kind of a desire to go shoot, I kind of just go out somewhere in the city and just wander around and kind of interact and watch people interact and kind of get my ideas from there. But also, I studied abroad in South Africa, and kind of leaving and going to a totally, totally different place, like academically and politically and everything. And then coming back here for another year really like definitely changed my work in a lot of ways. So I guess kind of it's the same sort of thing where you can go away for a while and then come back and see things in a different way.
What's your biggest challenge?
Post-graduation.
As an artist.
Qualify.
Yeah. Okay. What's your biggest challenge, do you think, to do what you want to do?
I think especially hearing about the experience in an MFA program in my situation where I have to worry about money and a job and stuff, and I haven't decided if I'm going to grad school or what, but just kind of forcing myself to keep making work and keep like set aside time to kind of really I kind of realize in retrospect how lucky I was to be in school and have so much time to do whatever it was that I wanted to, and so now it's kind of like more time management. You kind of have to force like yourself to keep doing it.
Yeah, keep doing it. That's really important. I think that for me right now, I just moved away from Baltimore and to East Lansing, Michigan. And I think that for me, having a community was always what really kept me doing it. And now moving and not really having a sure sense of what that community will be like is kind of a step into the unknown. But yeah.
Yeah, Andy.
I would agree with my colleagues in that to keep working is probably the most important and probably most difficult because, I don't know, as we were saying, graduate or art school is a very surreal experience where there are very few real responsibilities outside of school, and you can always just write everything off as like, I just got to go work when you're in school. So. But also right now I'm trying to fix my toilet.
Oh, that's a big challenge.
Yeah.
I need to see your toilet.
I go to the bar across the street.
Oh, I see you have a convenience. Corey, what about you?
Well, I definitely think that continuing to make work is hard. I don't think it's necessarily like the desire to work is not the hard part, because I don't have any problem with the desire. It's definitely the time and you know, the money, being able to do what you want to do. I definitely agree with Andy on, like, graduate school is a weird experience because there's no assignments, really. It's all seminars and time in your studio, and you get to meet people and have long discussions about art, you know, and that's like the most fabulous experience you can ever have, and now you have to go out and live in the real world, and that's kind of where we are right now. It's like, oh my God. You know, that is over. We're out of the bubble. Now we got to find what we're going to do. And I knew going into graduate school that I would never stop making art. It was more a matter of how I would develop my way of operating in the world. Was more what graduate school was about for me. So I've been fortunate, and I've I've met people like the people here at Connor Contemporary, and you know, you guys are great.
Nice plug, thank you.
And
ConnorContemporary.com.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Where were you?
And you know, having a show at PS1 concurrently with this is pretty amazing. And like I say, we just gotta. I think we're all just trying to find our way.
Fantastic. Anything anybody else would like to add, Corinne? Great. Well, thank you for coming to the podcast and being here, and you'll be able to download it yourself soon.
Thank you. Yeah.
You're
going
to say something, aren't you, Andy?
Academy 2006 is on view until August 26, 2006. More information is available by visiting our website at www.connor.com. Connor, contemporary.com.